What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode 131. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, joining us on the show will be Bellator welterweight Blake Perry, who is fighting in this weekend's Bellator 278 in Honolulu, Hawaii. We'll be discussing both of the upcoming Bellator events. We'll also be touching on some amazing boxing that we've seen both this past weekend and upcoming with the Spence Ugas results and ramifications, and of course a close look at the heavyweight showdown between Tyson Fury and interim champ Dillian Whyte. Before we get to the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day.
All right, so back with some layer cake again this week.
Yeah, that was so good last week, we had to bring it back again this week.
Yeah, absolutely. All that lineage just freaking builds up. And plus, honestly, I love this strain. Like, this was my first time trying it, and I'm probably going to go back and get some more.
Yeah, that was my first time last week on the show as well, and I'm really liking it. Got a couple other things this week as well. We brought a little Blue Dream Haze in for some sativa to balance everything out. Now, that's a cross of Blue Dream and Super Silver Haze. And I also have some wonderful news for me personally, because I found my missing PAX 3, which means that I am not out $250. And we can bring back some Tropicana Cookies wax as well.
Yes, sir.
So we'll hit that Blue Dream up later. We got that in the bowl. I'm really glad we got this again, though.
Yeah, honestly, any of those like cookies kind of like strains where it has like a lot of like cookies lineage, I feel like are some of my like favorites.
Dude, how influential has that strain been?
Oh yeah,
I mean, nuts. Seriously.
Just to think about all the different strains we've had on the show alone that have had Girl Scout cookies or like some different, you know, cookies lineages inside them is pretty much most of them, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the like transcendental, is that the right word?
Transcendent.
That's too big of a word that I'm trying to say right now. Yeah. While we're smoking and talking. Yeah. it really transformed genetics, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It came in, it was invented, and then so many different strains have branched out from that it's just amazing when you look at it.
I think it has a lot to do with like the smoothness of like of a lot of the cookie strains also. Like the you're never gonna obviously, I know you like the diesels and like, you know, a lot of like,
yeah, that's my
stuff
bag,
like that.
The,
but like
skunky diesel,
yeah,
jet
like
fuel-y
sometimes,
shit.
Yeah, sometimes those strains for like people who are not like as, you know, as like experienced as smokers. Sometimes those kind of strains will like turn them off to like a lot of weed.
No, that's for
like
real.
Because of that, like I feel like a lot of the cookie strains have like been able to not cookies brand, but you know what I mean, like the strain have
right.
Have like influenced so many different strain like types and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
I think that's why it's harder and harder to find, at least in certain locations. It might be different in different areas.
Yeah.
But like you don't find, in my estimation, not that I'm in them all the time or hitting them all up, but the dispensaries don't seem to have a lot of diesel strains and that branch and Chem Dog and these things. And I sometimes wonder if that's why, because sometimes I like to think of them as the malt liquor of weed.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
If the rest of the weed was beer, then this is some old E. Because you know how that, like, if you ever fucked with old E, like, or any of them, St. Ives, any of that shit, you know, it's like beer that somebody added all this extra goddamn
extra shit
funk
to
flavor
yeah.
to. You're like, oh, shit, it's manly shit, you know? And then it's not good.
Yeah.
And I don't, but I do like the weeds. I think it tastes good. But that's sometimes how I often think of it. It's like malt liquor. It's funky. It'll fuck you up. Man.
Yeah, it's funky. It'll fuck you up. That's the tagline of the show. It's funky, but it'll fuck you up.
Dude, that's some shit I haven't drank honestly since I was like 18, 19.
It's been a while.
That was the underage shit for me. Yeah. Fucking malt liquor, and Boone's Farm, and fuck. Did you ever? This is probably. I don't even know if they make this shit anymore. Do they still make Cisco? You know what that is?
Fuck no.
You know you don't know, or no, they don't make it.
No.
That shit was a very evil, evil CYSCO. Very evil, ghetto ass fucking wine that was like flavored like Jolly Ranchers. Fuck
dude,
your goddamn
world. My
up.
Generation, we had fucking Four Locos. That shit was. That was the shit you would steal from the gas station. You drink one of those and your fucking whole night's over.
Yeah, that, you know it, I mean? It's just like that. That's, mm-hmm.
Like Mad Dog 2020.
Yeah, Mad Dog is right in that same line with Cisco. That's
like,
exactly what we're talking
tastes
about.
Tastes like candy, but it'll put you to fucking sleep.
Yeah,
in
you're
like
going to be fucked up. And the next
seconds,
day,
yeah.
even if you're 19 or 20, the next day you're fucked up.
Puking your brains out.
Yeah. That's why nobody
or you're
over
puking
the
your
age
brains
of 21
out actively while
it.
Drinking it.
That's just for like winos and underage people.
Yeah. Or people who just, you know,
just don't
buck.
Give a fuck.
Yeah. They're just trying to get faded.
Yeah, and don't give a fuck about
the next
day.
I was at
the
gas station the other day with this girl and she said, do they have Four Locos here? I was like, all right, I gotta drop you off. This is rough.
Yeah. This ain't gonna work. I'm sorry. These days, I'm trying to drink the more expensive shit because like, not only does it taste good.
We don't have to drink this. Though.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Seriously, like if I go out and I'm going to drink a scotch, for instance, I'm going to buy the most expensive scotch. Maybe not here in Vegas because that can get out of hand, but
yeah.
You buy a top shelf scotch if you can because not only does it taste better, but the next day you get hangovers from shitty liquor. You drink a nice fine liquor the next day, it's nowhere near as fucking bad.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Not even close.
But
not even close.
That's not what today's show is about, so we should probably circle into our guest who is joining us today. All right, joining us today is Bellator welterweight Blake Perry, who is making his debut at the upcoming Bellator 278 on April 22nd from Honolulu, Hawaii, which will be on Showtime TV. Blake, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, man. I appreciate you guys having me, man. Any opportunity like this, I'm always super, super stoked to hop on, man. So I'm a fan of the show, and I appreciate y'all having me, man.
Well, great. Let's go ahead and kind of get started with some of the basics, you know, let our listeners get to know you a little bit. Where are you from, and how did you get started in mixed martial arts?
So I'm born and raised in Ohio in a small town called Jefferson. Closest big city is Cleveland, probably like an hour away. But born and raised in Northeast Ohio and grew up my whole life wrestling since I was a little kid, you know, and obviously in Ohio, not much else to do out there, man. So grew up wrestling out there. And then after my wrestling career ended when I was, you know, too old, got into mixed martial arts and just kind of went from there, man. It was a pretty smooth transition and just seemed to make sense. And I'm having a lot of fun with it, man.
So if for our listeners that haven't seen you fight in the past, how would you describe your overall like game plan when you're in the octagon with that wrestling background? Are you like real wrestling heavy? Are you more of a striker? How do you go about things in there?
I guess honestly, I would kind of consider myself like, to be honest, man, just kind of like an annoying fighter, you know. I like to just really keep the pace high and just force guys to fight my fight, you know. I like obviously wrestling and grappling because that's what I grew up doing, but I'm definitely a volume fighter, you know. I'm not like a one punch walk off knockout kind of guy. That's just not, you know, I'm not like that type of dude, but my style is kind of dragging dudes into deep water, and I have pretty good gas tank. Has always been a skill of mine. You know, I'm tall and skinny, and I got a good gas tank, so I try and use all those attributes to my advantages, man. So, I would say definitely I'm a volume fighter, if that makes sense.
What gym are you training out of right now?
It's called Team Nobody MMA in California, actually, is where I live now. It's a smaller gym, just a tight-knit group of guys out in like the Bay Area of California, in Fairfield is the name of the city.
How long have you been there?
Right about a year. Actually, just hit my year. Hit my 1 year mark out there.
Did you go there right when you moved out to California? Or have you been in California a little longer?
No, yeah, actually, right. I think like the week I moved to California, actually, I hit that gym up, and it was just a perfect fit, man. And there was no reason to look elsewhere, you know. I kind of, that's the best family I've had ever in fighting, in terms of like a gym. And I went there once met everybody, and I was like, I think I'm going to hang out here every day from now on.
So you say about a year. So what were your last three fights then, I would say, have been at, you've been in that gym?
Exactly. Yeah, correct.
You're on a four-fight winning streak in the amateurs.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes. Actually, there was a kickboxing fight in there, too, if you count that one. Yeah.
Kickboxing.
Yes.
Excellent. Do you feel like that gym has really helped you improve on any certain aspects of your game since you've been with them?
100%. I would say specifically my striking. There's good grappling coaches there too, absolutely. But the head coaches are very honed in on striking, and it worked out perfect because I think that was where I needed the most work in my game. So it was just kind of a match made in heaven, man. So I went there and really cleaned up my striking, and still a work in progress everywhere, obviously, you know, always trying to get better. But yeah, man, I would say moving out to California, the striking aspect has been huge.
So with that move out to California, like at what point, like in your life, did you decide like this is when you're going to take, this is going to be your profession, this is what you're going to do? Was it like directly after wrestling? Was there like a period where you kind of were deciding whether you were going to do it or not? Or is it just straight from wrestling on into fighting?
That's actually a good question, man, because it's like, it's funny how stuff works out, because, you know, I've wrestled for so long that when my wrestling career ended, there was like a short couple month period where I was like, you know, I think I'm just going to be just Blake down the street. You know, I'll get involved in something else and just find something else that makes me happy. But I think my competing years might be behind me. And then, you know, after a couple months of not doing a whole lot, you know, I was like, well, maybe I'll get involved in jiu-jitsu to stay in shape kind of thing. And then, you know, started training jiu-jitsu for a few months, and then got that competitive itch again. You know, I guess it just never really went away, man. And then that turned into, you know, my goal was to have an MMA fight, just an amateur MMA fight. I just wanted one. I thought it would be awesome. And then had one of those, and then just kept going with it and going with it, and then kind of just became my identity, man. And now it's, you know, making the jump to professional. It's just weird how things work out, and I wouldn't change anything, man. But yeah, it's just, I can say I've always definitely had it in my mind that I wanted to fight professionally, and it's always been a thing, but I didn't really start to seriously make it a goal of mine until probably 4 or 5 months after wrestling ended, and after I started to, what I thought was just going to be get back in shape in a gym, it turned into like, you know, I think I kind of want to try this shit, man, you know?
Yeah. You got that itch after those first couple of fights, huh?
That was it, man. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, man. I know what that feels like. I used to box a long time ago. I know that itch.
You know, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Paul is a wrestler as well.
There we go. You guys know.
You know, unlike a lot of fighters, you're getting a really cool opportunity to make your professional debut in, you know, the second, I'd say basically recognized as the second biggest organization in mixed martial arts with Bellator. And you get to do it on, you know, a pretty cool card in Hawaii, which for you is just a little short plane ride right across, right?
Yeah, right.
How does that feel to be able to kind of, you know, make your debut in the big, one of the big shows?
Dude, it's kind of crazy, man. It's just one of those things where it was pretty surreal, man, when I, you know, because, I mean, my last fight was in a hotel ballroom. You know what I mean? Like, I fought in trampoline places. I fought in hotel ballrooms, friggin' like glorified like warehouses and stuff, you know? So it's a big jump, man. It's definitely, I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity. And what better place, man, to get to fight in the best fucking place in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, shit, why not, man? I can't complain in any sense, you know, because definitely, yeah, like you said, man, you already said it, making a debut for Bellator, you can't complain, you know, that's dope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you feel you match up with your opponent, McCall Cooper, going in, like, obviously his family has this big name behind it in that region, and this obviously going to be his home crowd. Like, do you embrace that? Is that something you look forward to, like, you know, kind of playing off that?
Oh, 100%, man, because I have nothing but respect for him and his family. I've actually met the family several times and even trained with them and stuff. Super, they're great people. Every one of them has been nothing but cool to me. So nothing but respect there. But I also know how talented he and the rest of his family is. And like you said, his fan base out there. And so I got the call for the card with that name. I'm like, hell fucking yeah, I want that fight, dude. That's a no lose scenario, man. You know, I get to go out and fight a dude who I know is fucking tough. I know his family's tough, but you know, I'm there for a reason too, man. They called me for a reason. So, I heard the opportunity where it's at. Said, sign me up, bro. This is one of those memories that I want forever, man. So I can't wait to go out there and do my thing. And as I'm sure he's thinking the same thing, you know, because he's a younger guy too. He's had one professional fight and he's fighting in Bellator. So why not, man? Big opportunity for us both to go out there and bang it out. Have some fun, dude.
Yeah, it's a great matchup, man. We're really excited for you. What are a couple things that you would like our audience listeners to like know about you?
That's a good question. I think a couple things that,
you know, like maybe about you as a person, or it can be about your fighting or things you like or dislike, or.
Yeah. I would say I just am very, very, very grateful for the support system I have, because I know a lot of fighters talk about being self-made and all this kind of stuff. And I'm not, man. I'm not a self-made dude, because I'll be real. I know for a fact I wouldn't be where I am had it not been for an awesome support system. And because I've had rough times, just like I'd imagine most people have, you know. But I just want people to know that I'm not self-made. You know, I have an awesome support system, awesome coaches. I got an awesome girlfriend, family, little pit bull named Buddha. So I'm definitely thankful for every opportunity I get, man. And I love Hawaii too, is another thing, is because I actually lived there before California. I lived in Hawaii for 3 years, and that was my first 7 or 8 MMA fights were living in Hawaii out there. So this is almost, I'm not from Hawaii, but I'm not from Hawaii, but in a way it feels like going back home in terms of my MMA career. So yeah, man, I guess that was kind of a long rambling answer, but just overall, man, I just want people to know that I'm not self-made, that my support system's fucking awesome, and I just want them to know that I love and appreciate all of them.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Well, are you the kind of fighter, do you like keep close ties to the game? Do you watch like all different organizations, or are you the kind of guy that you're kind of focused on your own stuff?
Nah, dude, I'm a total fanboy. I love watching all the different organizations, and I like watching some boxing and little kickboxing and wrestling and getting into the bare knuckle, you know, watching the bare knuckle is fun. So I kind of like just looking. I definitely like watching.
Yeah, so do we. We're big fans of both boxing and bare knuckle, and obviously mixed martial arts too.
Right.
Like if you had to name any fighters, it could be boxers or mixed martial artists or karate guys, whatever, like your Mount Rushmore or your top three fighters of all time, or who would that be?
Ooh, good question. I would say I love watching like the old school, some of the old school dudes like Jason Mayhem Miller. Yeah. I don't know if y'all remember him. He was fun to watch. I loved his grappling style. Then there's, you know, some obvious ones like you gotta love the Diaz brothers. I was a Mayhem Miller fan. And then as far as like just the fighters that the mindset I love watching is like Robbie Lawler. He's the shit, man. Yeah. Just the friggin' modern day gladiator, dude. But I would say those are my three. I guess I kind of listed the Diaz brothers as one, but you know.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah. Sure. They fit together. It's okay.
Yeah. They come as a pair for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, Blake. This has been great. Where can our listeners find you on social media if they want to connect?
So pretty much Instagram is the spot for me, man, because outside of that, I'm really not real heavy on social media, but on Instagram, I'm pretty active. It's just Blake MMA 170, just one word.
Blake MMA 170 on Instagram. Well, everybody, Blake Perry, he's making his debut against Makoa Cooper. That's Bellator 278, April 22nd of this year, coming to you from Honolulu, Hawaii. Be sure to tune in on Showtime. Thank you so much for joining us, Blake.
Thank you.
And good luck on the 22nd.
Yo, thanks for having me, man. You guys are awesome. I appreciate y'all.
You bet. We'll talk to you later, man.
Sounds good, man. Peace.
All right. Well, that was great having Blake on the show. Really looking forward to his pro debut on Bellator 278.
Yeah, me too. And the cool thing about where he's fighting on the card is that it's a Showtime card, but they put the prelims for free where everybody can see it. Even if you don't have Showtime, you can catch him fighting on YouTube or Pluto TV on the preliminary portion of the card. The card itself, though, is pretty interesting. We've got back-to-back Bellator events, so 278 and 279 happening one right after the other consecutively. Yeah. But 278 is pretty cool. It's going to be dedicated for military and first responders, so there's actually no tickets on sale to the general public. I always liked the UFC kind of used to do that stuff, right?
Yeah, they used to do that stuff.
And they got away from it a bit.
Now they just do like more like they just send guys out there. They never do like events out there anymore.
Exactly. It's headlined by Bellator women's flyweight title bout between their undefeated flyweight champ, Juliana Velasquez, and Liz Carmouche, who we're both familiar with coming over from the UFC. It also features a couple wild card qualifier bouts for the Bellator Bantamweight Grand Prix that we're getting because of that injuries that happened to Sergio Pettis and James Gallagher, which was
which are two huge names for that
like
tournament.
The two biggest names in a lot of people, right?
I mean, one of them's a champ, obviously. So,
all right, so now we've got Josh Hill facing Enrique Barzola and the winner meeting Magomed Magomedov in the opening round. So tough out for them in the opening. And then the winner of the second qualifier between Jornel Lugo and Daniel Sabatello will then face Leonardo Higo in the first round of the tournament.
Tough draw.
Yeah. Due to COVID, Hill had to pull out of the bout, and then he wound up being replaced by Nikita Mikhailov, if I'm pronouncing that right. Had a couple other cancellations on there, but it's a solid card overall. Of course, opened up, as we discussed during his interview, by Blake Perry versus Makoa Cooper, which is a very interesting fight itself. And, of course, we're going to be rooting for Blake. And with a victory here, be a great way to start his Bellator career.
Absolutely.
Now let's kind of move up here. You know, what do you think of some of these bantamweight Grand Prix action that we're getting? It's not what we wanted, but it's still...
It's a double... you can look at it two ways, basically. You know, you can look at it as, unfortunately, we're not going to get Sergio Pettis or James Gallagher, obviously two real big names in Bellator. But at the same time, you can look at it a way where maybe a couple guys who are just coming onto the scene that are looking for that breakout moment or that breakout fight now get their chance while those guys are on the sideline, and you can end up making a star out of one of these guys if they're able to, you know, get through this tournament. And now you have two stars waiting in the wings for them to then fight. So
that's a very good point, Paul. And that has happened before with Scott Coker. It wasn't in Bellator, but over in Strikeforce. Strikeforce, you know, most famously with Daniel Cormier coming in due to an injury as a replacement fighter and then going on to win it and then breaking out, you know.
Becoming one of the biggest names in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a tremendous opportunity. You know, we're sad to see the champ and a contender like Gallagher go out. And it's nothing too serious. I think they'll both be back in just fine. So it's not the end of the world or anything. But this does open a lot of interesting opportunities for Hill and Barzola, as well as Lugo and Sabatello.
So, absolutely.
And we'll see, you know. They get through, you know, this opening round. They both have an extremely tough out in the next round.
Absolutely.
I love these tournaments.
Right? And that's what's, like, the same thing I was saying. But that's good, though, too, because if they've got one of those, like, a tough guy like Higo coming in the first round, he goes in there and he beats Leandro Higo. That's that will
or Magomedov, either
like,
one. Yeah,
on, both those guys,
both those guys
huge.
Are tough.
Like,
very tough. Yeah. Now, probably, you know, with the champ and Gallagher out, I would say those two guys have got to be favored as overall winners of the tournament at this point, you know, this opening
Higo.
Season.
I think it's like a three-way tie, like Magomedov, Higo, and probably Juan Archuleta.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about the flyweight title that's on the line. This is, you know, a pretty interesting bout here. Their flyweight champ, Juliana Vasquez, she's undefeated. And Liz Carmouche is really, really tough. I mean, the girl Rilla is no joke. She's really strong. She is dropping down from ultimately where she had success in the UFC, which is at 35.
Yeah.
So she's smaller, and she had to have lost some muscle mass, I figure. I don't think she's just cutting extra water weight and being the same size. It's too big of a difference here between 25 and 35, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And she was always very built, you know what I mean? So I don't know if she's fought at 25 prior to this, do you? I mean,
well,
prior
in Bellator.
To coming into Bellator. Like, I believe that this drop was her first down to this weight class.
I think her it could have been maybe her last two in the UFC might have been. I'm not quite sure, though.
Should have looked it up. I know we could right now, but it's not vital to my point. I'm just my point being I don't think she's lost much strength.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that
she's not compromising herself either.
She could easily, I think she could win the title here, is what I'm saying.
There's a cool little angle here that maybe if you're not very like close to the Bellator scene, you wouldn't notice. But also, this is kind of a revenge match because, you know, Juliana Velasquez took her teammate's belt. She took Alimaleh McFarland's belt. Mm-hmm. And her and Alimaleh are extremely close if you follow, you know, their gym. And, you know, that was always something that those two, being the UFC and being Bellator, like, they always would kind of be there to, like, match the other's opponent. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So this is going to be interesting because now you would think Liz has technically trained for this fight twice. You know what I'm saying? Because she trained for this for when Alimaleh was fighting her, but now she's training for her fight coming up. It's going to be interesting how she approaches the game plan.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by that fight, and I'm rooting for Liz Carmouche here to get a title. I've always liked her, and I think she brings a high level of experience, and her wrestling is very strong.
Oh yeah,
and she's also got some heavy hands for the weight class, I feel, and I'm gonna go ahead and pick her to win.
Real quick, I just want to strike what I said from the history books. If Horiguchi is in this bantamweight tournament, he is the hands down favorite without Pettis or fucking.
Yeah, I'm noticing that too.
I
on
just saw that. I was not
Horiguchi's
aware he was
fighting
in there.
Patchy Mix, and Patchy's a tough out, but Horiguchi has got to be the favorite now that the everybody else we just mentioned is all off. Right. But yeah, let's move on to the very next card here. This is going on April 23rd, so the very next day. We've got Bellator 279, which is Cyborg headlining a card versus, how do you say her name? Is it Blenkow?
Yeah, Arlene Blenkow.
Arlene Blenkow. Okay, that's what I thought, but I didn't want to mispronounce it. And I know you're a little bit more familiar with her than I am.
Yeah.
And this is also the start of the million-dollar Bellator Bantamweight World Grand Prix, not the, you know, we got the alternate fights the night before, but now the regular tournament itself is starting. So very, very intrigued in seeing. We've got Archuleta making his debut in the tournament tonight, or his first round, and as you mentioned, Horiguchi, Apache Mix, and Rofferain Stotts. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with him.
But Apache Mix is always a tough out. Him versus Horiguchi, though, that's tough for Mix.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it says that this Stotts is a training partner of Sergio Pettis.
Okay, there you go.
There you go. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole tournament goes because, you know, the last two tournaments, there's been some ups and downs because, like, the heavyweight one was good, but there was kind of some drag out, you know. Obviously, that wasn't exactly their fault because of COVID and everything like that, but, like, there was some dragging there as far as the timeline. This last one with the featherweights was pretty good. I think it really made a star out of AJM Key, and obviously, you know, that whole they're obviously going to fight a third time, so that kind of has built.
He says he's done at featherweight.
Oh, wow.
That just came out.
But either way, you know what I mean?
It could, like, be just talk, but he's like, I'm done at 45.
Either way, I just mean, like, these tournaments have gone on to build stars for Bellator.
Yes, they've worked.
And they've worked. So I'm going to be very curious to see, like, even a guy like Horiguchi, who's had so much success already in his mixed martial arts career, mm-hmm. like, it just sets a path for another great run for him, you know?
Yes, it certainly does. We've also got an interesting women's flyweight bout on here with McFarlane versus Justine Kish.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Justine is another former UFC fighter. She fights here out of Vegas. She's actually a really cool person. My daughter's taken a couple lessons from her at, what's his name's jiu-jitsu? Drysdale.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, she's real cool. But that's a good fight.
I like McFarlane a lot, too.
McFarlane's a former champ.
She's cool as fuck. I've watched all her interviews. She seems pretty dope as well.
Bellator's quietly got some stars here. They just don't. There's stars in the MMA. Like, if you know who they are, like, these are great fighters with great personalities that they've kind of homegrown on some of these ones. But they're not able with their platform and their promotion to break through. They have to really kind of go the next step to a different promotion. Obviously, most likely the UFC. But
I just don't understand what is the difference that necessarily, like, holds them back. Because there is, like you were saying, pretty good talent pool at a lot of these weight classes. Like, 170 pounds in Bellator is, like, I know 170 in the UFC has gotten a lot of stars in it now. But
yeah,
two, three years ago, they were, I thought the 170s in Bellator were better.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really gets that viewership in Bellator, like, you know what I mean? See, all their best stars, they just don't even get that viewership that a UFC star would get or someone who's like a mid-tier, like, UFC fighter sometimes.
Right.
Like, a lot of these just regular guys on the – not regular guys, but you know what I mean? Like, the lower-level stars that are on these UFC fight nights are getting better numbers than some of these stacked Bellator pay-per-views. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree. Well, the main card opens with the match between Horiguchi and Apache Mix. And as much as I find Apache Mix to be an interesting fighter, I think Horiguchi is going to murder him. Horiguchi is no joke. We all know it.
Yeah.
And I expect a clear victory here for him. Let's move up there a little bit. Who do you like in the Kish McFarlane bout?
I'm going to take McFarlane.
Yeah, I mean, she's...
She's coming, you know, she's climbing back to the belt. You know, she needs big performances.
I'm rooting for Justine just for personal reasons. But, I mean, if I was, I wouldn't bet money on it.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can win, and she's got a good chance. And if she beats McFarlane, that's a hell of a statement.
Oh, yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You're here to cause some damage in the division.
Absolutely.
So it would be it's a great opportunity for her. Mm-hmm. The next bantamweight bout between Archuleta, who's replacing Pettis, and then he's fighting, as you mentioned, Pettis' training partner, Stotts.
Yeah.
Dude, Juan Archuleta is another.
He's a top tier talent of that division, bro. Like, there's, you know, he might be even up there with some of the UFC guys. Like, I could see Juan Archuleta beating a good amount of people in the top 15 in the UFC. He's a very, very interesting, like, talent. Because, like, he's so explosive. You know what I mean? Like, he can literally change the fight at any moment with some crazy, like, it's just crazy. Like, when you see him, like, go from point A to point B, like, when he, like, chases, not actually chases the knockout, but gets a little wild, it either goes, like, so fucking, so, like, crazy good, or just, like, people just wear him out. And I'm curious to see when he gets deeper into this tournament, like, how he will, a lot of these bigger guys, and a lot of these, like, because he's going to fight the best of the best after this first round. Mm-hmm. I think disrespect.
He's going to be fighting, I do believe, Horiguchi. It would be, if they both win, I think they fight each other. It's how the tournament plays out. Because the winner of the other ones are getting, I think, I don't know, I haven't seen the brackets. I don't even know if Bellator releases brackets like that. But whatever, the next fights are going to be sick.
Yeah.
And we're both obviously thinking Archuleta is going to win here, which brings us to the title fight, which, no offense to Arlene Blancow, but you're fighting Cyborg. You've already lost to her once. You know, it's Chris Cyborg. I'm expecting a KO.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's not meant to be disrespectful, but you're fighting arguably the greatest of all time. I mean, you can argue between her and Amanda.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's an argument for both, and we're not really going to debate that, because the fact that it's one or the other is an endless debate on who it is, but it's undebatable that she's one of the two.
Absolutely.
Like, there's nobody else that you would say, no, this person is above her. It's Amanda and this person. No. No. So, yeah, there's going to be a KO there, and hopefully we'll be maybe getting something from the PFL with a joint co-promotion for Kayla Harrison versus Cyborg. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that you can think that maybe you can get a foot in the door with that kind of conversation is Horiguchi, just because he's been in Ryzen for years and they've borrowed him and he's gone over there and they've had guys over there back and forth. So it's not like Bellator is like the UFC where they're not open to it.
Very true.
It just comes down to a numbers game. One fight I did want to bring up, though, on the undercard that I kind of glanced over is Yancy Medeiros is fighting Emmanuel Sanchez.
That's a lightweight bout. Yeah.
Out in freaking Hawaii, which that should be freaking lit.
Not hometown, but home state.
Yeah.
That should be absolutely lit. I wonder if the Diaz brothers will be there. I mean, they're friends with Yancy and fans.
Dude, Nate was trying to get a fight on this card.
I remember.
Yeah, Nate was saying he wanted to fucking.
I would be surprised if they weren't there then, especially gives them a chance to go to Hawaii. Yeah. So, that's a great fight. Definitely rooting for Yancy.
Yeah.
But he'll have his hands full. Sanchez is another one of these.
Another one of those guys.
Kind of flying under the radar of the general public fighters, or maybe even MMA. If some people get so focused on the UFC, there's a lot. I mean, I have a card every week. It's hard sometimes.
To keep up with them all.
But yeah, Emmanuel Sanchez is a
savage,
strong fighter.
Yeah.
But Yancy, I like Yancy here.
Yeah, I like Yancy too.
That's good shit. I'm really looking forward to that fight. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's my favorite fight on the undercard.
Yeah.
I'd say
my favorite fight on the whole card, though, is going to be that Horiguchi versus Patchy Mix. That's a very interesting matchup to me.
Definitely. I agree. That's a great way to open up the main event. Mm-hmm.
Well, that kind of wraps up our Bellator discussion.
It does. Let's go ahead and bring in the boxing breakdown. We haven't done this segment in a minute. Paul?
Yep.
But we had some action going on this past weekend in the welterweight division. I mean, with Errol Spence Jr. finally making his return.
Yep.
You know, against the guy who retired Pacquiao, took his belt.
Mm-hmm.
Ugas, the fierce Cuban fighter.
Yeah.
Hell of a bout. How'd that end, though?
Dude, Spence is next level, man.
Yeah, he gets a TKO in the 10th round because he broke the orbital.
Broke his orbital. Had to pummel
for a while afterwards.
Yeah. Looked like his eyes were going to pop out of his head.
Yeah, he looked like
the guy from the Goonies. Yeah.
Yeah, he did, man. Exactly.
That was rough.
And he's Ugas is a strong fighter. And we saw Errol Spence open up in ways that we've actually never seen him in.
It's kind of more like young Errol Spence.
Yeah. he was letting loose. I mean, he fucked up a little bit. Like, he lost his mouthpiece. It was the sixth round.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he took his eyes off of Ugas, and then he got hit, but he recovered just fine.
Yeah.
That was the only time that he was hurt, and it was kind of his own fault.
Yeah.
I mean, even he was like, yeah.
But he hasn't been in the freaking ring in what, 17 months?
Right. But that was all we really saw. Like, he looked amazing. And
absolutely.
Afterwards, Paul, he did something which was a bit out of character. I mean, he's the guy that after he wins and they're like, who do you want to face next? And he's like, well, you know, whoever the PBC wants to line up for me or whoever.
Yeah, whoever's got the next belt. Like,
whatever. Not this time.
Nope.
This time he had a very specific opponent in mind.
Yeah, him and Terrence Crawford need to run it.
Terrence Crawford responded immediately that he was down.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean much because he's still without a promoter.
Yeah, however, but I think that almost makes it more of a chance that it's going to happen that he does not have the former promoter he did have. Because that was, I feel like, the biggest obstacle was, like, stopping that fight.
Yeah, him and Aram.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all he's got going on right now is that lawsuit, which, God bless Terrence Crawford. That's not going to go anywhere, but I mean, it's a silly lawsuit.
Yeah.
On merit, I think. Like, I don't know the heart of Bob Arum, but I'm just saying that I think he could easily
be, well, like, he's looking, all lawyered up for sure, you know.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, there's a whole, he's got a whole ton of fighters and fighters he's promoted over the years that, anyways.
Yeah.
Do you think Crawford's going to sign with someone before or try to do it on his own in some way? Can he do it on his own? I'm not sure in the politics of boxing when it comes to something like that. We don't really see that.
Maybe he would have to...
I mean, Mayweather negotiates his ownership, but he does it through Mayweather Promotions.
Unless maybe Crawford made some kind of, you know, promotion for himself. That's all he would have to do, I guess.
It shouldn't be too hard for him just to sign with somebody. He's got to be close, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Those kind of things was like, what, months ago? When
I really thought he was going to go with Mayweather Promotions when we did that little piece about it.
Yeah. Well, those rumors and articles written about it made it seem like that was like imminent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, this is the fight to make, is obviously Crawford versus Errol Spence Jr. And this will be a historic bout for this welterweight division, because it will be the first time in the four belt era that there will be a unified champion. And you know, we can all debate the merits of having four belts and the mess that it creates and whatever, but that's a historic thing to accomplish. To not especially only unify, it's hard enough to unify the three, but to manage to get all four of them motherfuckers together, this is a big, big moment for welterweight boxing history and for boxing as a whole. And I really hope, Paul, whoever winds up winning this purse bid and getting this fight,
better be big.
You better do this shit right. Don't fuck around, man, because you've got a couple guys that haven't really broke out in the mainstream.
But in the boxing community, they're fucking huge.
The thing. They're right. They got it, man. And whoever wins this fight, especially if it's convincing, is going to be a fucking superstar. You've got to promote this shit right.
Yeah.
And you've got rematch material. You've got, you know, hopeful trilogies for the ages. Well, there's a lot that could happen here.
And I think that's one thing that could possibly stall this, is this contract is going to have to be, this contract is going to be freaking sealed tight as far as rematch clauses. As far as all the stuff you just named right now, like that's the politics of boxing that could possibly get this fight slowed down. But I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's keep our fingers crossed that we can get through it and it happens. Mm-hmm.
It's got to happen. It's literally, there's nobody else. Who else do they want him to fight?
No, these things have to happen, and both parties are interested. And the only question mark, really, is that Crawford's still without a promoter, so we'll see. And boy, are we gonna cover that when it's announced. And at that point, I mean, we'll really dive into styles and how they match up against each other, because I'm not even going to make a general prediction on the fight. I have no idea. That's a fight requiring a very deep dive that we'll probably do a whole entire episode on, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, yeah. I'm not even going to go into it.
Right.
Just, all the ideas are going through my head right now. There's so much, so many layers that go into that fight because of the history in their division and what's happened to the guys in the last couple months and years. Like, all that shit matters.
Yeah. So let's keep our fingers crossed, everybody, that this deal gets done and we get a date, and it's hopefully like soon, this year, before winter even. That would be amazing. That'd be nice. Now let's move on to the big heavyweight action that has taken place this weekend as well, where we have the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, defending the WBC belt and his ring title and lineal status against the interim champion, Dylan White. This fight is taking place in England at Wembley Stadium this weekend in front of 94,000 people. Like, we've had Fury here in Vegas, and it's been awesome. Mm-hmm. But T-Mobile only holds, like, 22K.
Yeah.
That's not even fucking comparable. It is four times the size of some crazy Brits fucking cheering their guys. Because these are both a couple of popular guys in England. Now Tyson Fury's a superstar worldwide. Once in a generation type. But it's easy for us in America to dismiss the popularity of Dylan White, because over here, no disrespect to him, nobody gives a shit about Dylan White in America.
Yeah.
Okay? But in the UK, he is a big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's 33. I mean, obviously he's smaller than Fury, but how big is he? He's 6'4", right? 76-inch reach. He's orthodox. He's 28-2, 19 knockouts. Been around since 2011.
He's tough. I've seen him fight a few times. He's real tough. But I just don't see any scenario where he beats Tyson Fury.
No, Fury's the same age, and of course he's 6'9". I mean, Fury's, he's got an 85-inch reach.
Just, if you look at Fury's like career as a whole, like, the comeback not only changed his mentality, but like his overall style as a fighter too. Because if you look at Fury back when he won the title versus Klitschko and fights before that, he was such a like defensive boxer, and he was, you know, he'd point you to death, and that just outbox you, make you look stupid, you know what I mean? And he had defense that was top notch, and he still does. Don't get me wrong, he still has those things, I think since the Wilder fights and since having to, you know, fight fire with fire, it's made Tyson Fury a better fighter, because now he has not only that defense and that finesse when he wants to go to it, but now he sits down on his punches like he never has before, and he fucking will lay you on your ass.
His body is different. Mm-hmm. He's heavier now than, you know, than before. Like, but he's transformed it from fat into muscle.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's very powerful, even though, I mean, he's got, what, 22 knockouts in 32 fights.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's not knocking anybody out.
Well, here's my question to you. I wonder if going into this fight, because he is, like, here's the thing. I think a big part of, like, the second and third Wilder fights coming in as heavy as he did was to be, like, physically imposing on Wilder.
Yeah, he was muscling, like, his little ass around.
Yeah.
Comparatively little ass.
Yeah. But in a situation like with Dylan White, where, not saying that Dylan White doesn't have knockout power, because everyone in the heavyweight division has knockout power, and he has quite a few knockouts in his career. But I'm just saying, he's not Wilder as far as, like, one-punch power. Do you think Tyson's going to come in as heavy, or do you think he's not really going to care about being, like, super heavy and kind of... Because if you look at the second one, he was, like, 270 or 268 or something like that. And then the third one, he was 285. Mm-hmm. So...
And he was in shape, 285 as well.
I mean, but practically, you can tell, like, he put that weight on, you know what I'm saying, to go into that fight. It didn't seem like he was walking around at 285.
No, you could tell that was his strategy, dealing with Wilder and helping wear Wilder out and being able to withstand those punches too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's what I mean. So do you think that's a trend that continues in his career, or do you think he's just going to go kind of...
It's so hard to say. I really don't know. That's why I'm really intrigued by the weigh-in.
Yeah.
Now, there might be footage out there of Tyson and stuff about his weight that I'm unaware of, because I haven't been able to. We have to watch so many fights. I can't follow every little thing. We have lives too.
Plus, this one is over the pond, so it's kind of like it's kind of being tailored to you know, kind of that part of the world.
I mean, he looked in shape at the press conference.
Yeah,
but there's not anything to judge him against. Like, you know, Dylan White didn't even fucking show up.
Yeah.
And it's not like Fury standing next to a cutout of how he weighed at the other fight. Mm-hmm. So it's because he always looks big. He's fucking, he's a giant man. He's a
giant motherfucker, 6'9".
So I think we'll learn a lot at the weigh-ins about that. I'm real intrigued by what his weight is, if he comes back in under his last fight or at the same.
Yeah, I think that's going to kind of could dictate how he fights as well. You know what I mean? Because like when he... The second and third fight against Wilder, he was in such a more like aggressive state that like even when in those couple warm up fights he had before the Wilder 2 and 3, it was like that first one he had that quick knockout, but like the one where
he got
Wallen cut,
fight where he got cut and he had to...
like he wasn't like uberly aggressive throughout that fight. He was like kind of a mix, you know. He was kind of pointing him up, but then he hit him with some big shots also. And I just never saw him trying to, like, really just, like, kill Walling in there. Like, I saw him try to put Wilder out in the second and third fight. You know what I mean?
Now, he's also changed camps, you know, since then as too. Well. And I think, you know, in this new camp with Stewart, he's a little more focused on his power.
Yeah.
Or so it seemed. I think that's a fun thing about Fury, man. He's
so well-rounded.
His fight IQ is absolutely amazing. I don't think his best has been reached, and I think that he could show us new shit because he keeps doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll know we'll get amazing movement. We'll know he's going to go in there and he's going to look like fucking Sweet Pea Whitaker.
Yeah.
You know, slipping and sliding and fucking making guys miss. But all the questions kind of revolve around his aggression levels, his weight, and if he's going to pursue the KO. Because I think he can put Dylan White away pretty quickly, honestly.
Yeah.
Their skill levels just aren't comparable. It's not a disrespect to Dylan White. But, dude, it's the Gypsy King.
Yeah.
He's the best of this era, and he's going to go out there and he's going to smoke him.
I do think, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I also do think, like, he doesn't really have to show, like, that's the best part about Tyson Fury is, like, his ability to show us something new every single fight. Like, you were saying, like, you wish you could see, like, the most complete version of him. I don't think we ever will see the most complete version of Tyson Fury just because I feel like he's kind of like the same thing kind of John Jones does. When you're, like, you're the greatest guy in a division or you're the best guy in the world and you know you're the best guy in the world, you want to not only go out there and beat your opponent, but you want to beat them where they're best at.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what Tyson Fury does a lot. Like, in the Wilder fight, he was like, you know what? I just, you know, I was going to do what I was going to do before and do that shit. But matter of fact, this time I'm going to go out there and I'm going to beat your ass.
Yeah, that second fight, like, you're gonna lit him up.
Yeah. You think I'm going to knock you out. Remember, everyone said that was so crazy for Tyson to say after the first fight. Going into the second and the third, everyone was like, you're going to knock him out. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? And then when he did it, it was so fucking devastating. And I think that's kind of what Tyson Fury's career is built on. You know, like, not only a great, like, self-belief, but having so many tools in the toolbox that when it comes down to it, knowing you're better than another dude, and then you go out there and you execute at the level that he does, that's what makes Tyson Fury the best heavyweight in the world, no matter what. And that's why I feel like Dylan White is not going to be able to do anything for him, because no matter what he's got, I feel like Tyson Fury has either a counter or something better.
100%. And it's going to sound like I'm fanboying out, but I mean, I'm being serious. Like, I'm a boxing aficionado. You know, it's what I grew up doing.
Yeah.
And I really believe this. I think we are lucky to be watching Tyson Fury fight. Like, athletes like Tyson Fury in their particular sports, they only come along once in a fucking while.
Yeah.
Like, we got it with Tyson. You get it with Ali. You get it.
Those transcendent
stars. And it doesn't
stars.
Fucking happen very often. Yeah. And we got it right now with Tyson Fury. And you should order that pay-per-view. or stream it or whatever you do to watch fights, but you shouldn't miss it just because you don't know who Dylan White is, or maybe you think it's obvious Fury's going to win, which it is. But you should watch it anyway because you're going to watch a master technician at the doing what he was born to do better than anybody else is doing it right now.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
So don't miss this fucking Fury White shit, in my opinion. Like, I won't miss it. I'm really excited about it. I'm looking forward to the aftermath because we don't really know what's happening. Fury says he's retiring.
Fury said he's retiring.
But the situation's changed.
Yeah, now Usyk is given the opportunity to go over and go back to training. So now that changes the whole scenario out now.
Yes.
So I'm curious to see how this plays out.
Me too.
Should be very good.
We'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we have even more boxing just in the pipe coming down. And it's
There's a lot of high-level boxing coming up in the next couple of weeks.
And just like last week's fight, you know, in the welterweight division that had such ramifications for the future, so does this one. It has just big ramifications for the division, for boxing history. Because if Fury really goes out and that's it, well, I mean, he's going to go out undefeated, holding, you know, one pretty recognized belt. And the ring in the boxing community, it's pretty recognized. It's got the lineal thing that, you know, some of us are real bully for. But boxing, unlike UFC and MMA, boxing's pretty big on recognizing their lineal champs. They fucking always talk how he's the lineal champ. You know? Like they never do in like MMA.
No, so
if you're not used to it in boxing, you might just brush that off as maybe not a big deal. But in the boxing community, it's a big deal. He could retire with all that. Or he could stick around and fight the winner of Usyk Joshua and unify the four belts again.
Which would be nice.
Oh, that'd be nutty. I'm really excited, Paul. It's fucking great boxing coming up. This has been a great episode, man. I'm happy that we could have Blake on. Looking forward to that. I want to remind everybody to tune in and root for Blake Perry. YouTube, Pluto TV. You can watch for free. You don't have to have Showtime.
Yep.
And that's the show for today.
Yep. Head over to SWATMA.com, buy a t-shirt, support the podcast, and then head over to Instagram and follow us at SWAT MMA Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.